SBS Radio.
It's something really major for Australia and actually on an international scale. So there's 16 million hectares of Indigenous protected areas will go into a planning phase now. That includes large areas in the Central Australian Desert. It includes tropical areas like the Arafura Swamp, the home of the Ten Canoes movie, as far as also Cape York. So a number of different landscapes from wet tropical rainforest to Spinifex Desert will go into a planning phase to develop Indigenous protected areas, which is conservation led by traditional owners themselves.
And we've got seven new proposed Indigenous protected areas. We understand native title gives certain land rights to Indigenous people, fishing rights per se. What effectively does this status of Indigenous protected areas mean for the Arafura Swamp, the Tiwi Islands, etc.?
It's the traditional owners themselves deciding that they want to contribute some of their land or sea to Australia's protected area network. And that can only be a decision made by the traditional owners. Once they make that decision, they go into a partnership with the federal government that provides flexible funding so that they can develop their own governance arrangements and their own plan over their own country. But I think one of the key elements of this is it cannot go ahead unless the traditional owners want and decide that it must happen. And what it then creates is an incredible platform for cooperation around combining traditional, cultural and local knowledge with contemporary science to manage things like fire, threatened species, feral animals, invasive weeds. And these are things that make a huge impact on Australia's biodiversity, and basically we can't protect what's good about our Australian natural environment without working cooperatively with traditional owners.
And so does that effectively mean that, you know, development's banned in that area? It's almost like, say, a national park, that kind of status of protection?
It's a different nature. Decision-making is retained within control of the traditional owners. So it's really decisions about what is balanced with the conservation is up to the traditional owners. By and large, in most of these areas, to be honest, there are limited economic opportunities. They're places where traditional owners have managed to get land back, and often, you know, the reality is that that's areas that the rest of society didn't take in the first place. And so some of these areas don't have a lot of other obvious opportunities. But if people want to create tourism, if they want to initiate other projects on their country, that's still up to them on the country that they own and control. What this is saying is that people are prioritising a management framework over that country that they consider will help protect country and culture.
And when you say that this is significance on a world level, worldwide level as well, creating the largest protected area on Earth, can you tell us more as to the significance of this model of having this Indigenous-led conservation and what you meant when you said it has that global significance?
The biggest protected area on Earth is actually the Greenland ice sheet, believe it or not, and that's the biggest one. But outside that ice sheet, then the interconnected protected areas in the desert, they're all linked up. Indigenous protected areas, some connected with national parks. There's a huge conglomeration of IPAs in the desert. That is outside the Greenland ice sheet. That's the biggest protected area on Earth once these Indigenous protected areas are finished their planning. But what I would say is that we were just in Canada earlier this year, and we know that despite, you know, many really advanced initiatives that the Canadian First Nations have taken through treaty and other methods, that they still look to Australia for the on-ground conservation funding and management that comes from the government and is partnered by or led by traditional owners through a partnership. That is still really unique. Australia is a world-leading model on both Indigenous ranges and Indigenous protected areas. And that's bringing an immediate benefit, if you like, because native title is and land rights are fundamentally important to people's capacity to exercise, you know, control over their country. But they're not enough necessarily by themselves alone. This is bringing jobs, stronger support for governance, and the capacity for traditional owners to say, look, we want to develop, but we want to do this in a way that's compatible with country and culture as we see it on our local scale. So I think it's a great model of, you know, the government actually coming to the party with traditional owners in a leadership position. Now, there's a lot more to do. there's a lot of applications and a lot of people that would be keen to do more of this work. I think we can do more on funding, we can do more on security of funding, but today's or yesterday's announcement is really something to pause and reflect on as how much great work traditional owners have done over, you know, decades to get to this position where they're able now to be initiating these really big and important protected areas in different parts of the country.
And you're saying that the Indigenous Ranger and their care of land has really been looked to internationally as great, you know, care of stewardship of the land. We know that climate change is one of the big threats that are facing our Pacific Islands and facing the world. Could the knowledge base of the Indigenous Rangers and the Indigenous culture here help provide, point a way forward?
The practical reality is, you know, we're all in this together now, and some of the people that are feeling the most sharp impacts of climate change are traditional owners. I mean, you go out to the desert to Maralinga, where one of these IPAs is proposed, where people were recording temperatures over 50 degrees just last summer. You look at areas like the Arafura Swamp, which are very low-lying coastline and will be exposed to sea level rise, and other climate-driven impacts like mangrove dieback. Now, in order to be able to both respond and defend against climate change impacts, you have to have people managing on the ground. And so it's actually not an option not to be working with people, but we must do it in a way that's not exclusive, but is in fact, you know, recognises and supports the agency of people that have already been there for thousands of years and can bring so much to the table and do in terms of tackling some of these key threats. So I would say in a climate context, we don't have an option, but we need to be able to, you know, work with rather than do to traditional owners in all parts of the country. And I think one of the positives about Indigenous protected areas is that they do create a platform for that. And that's why, you know, we're huge advocates for seeing, you know, more funding, longer term funding security, but also recognising that to some degree across politics now. And, you know, we commend Minister Susan Ley and Ken Wyatt on today's announcement, because we don't want these things to be subject to political whims and, you know, the wind's blowing one way or the other. And I think, you know, credit to the Coalition, they do have a long history of supporting Indigenous protected areas.
And can you tell me more about this alliance of 40 Indigenous groups and the Pew organisation, the Pew Trust, banding together for this Indigenous protected areas? Tell me a little bit about what this means in terms of the how many years you've been campaigning for this and some of the thoughts and feelings of yourself and the members of the group who are finally seeing this happen.
Yeah, well, we found out about the announcement on Sunday night, so we're still reaching out to many of our partner groups who are in remote areas, and they're just finding out about it, a lot of them. So certainly the ones that were successful in this round are really celebrating, and it's a really positive thing. It's a reflection of their hard work over many years, including decades. The Country Needs People Alliance is really a recognition that we cannot manage Australia without people on the ground delivering that management every day. We have to manage fire, we have to manage feral animals and weeds, and that's proactive management. It's not about just locking things up or walking away. In the case of traditional owners, well, there's so much more to do, and we know that people are really committed to their country. They want to be the central and leading decision makers about management of that country, not a matter of, you know, being consulted with or talked to about someone else's project. That's why we think, you know, this is an important, these are important models. But Country Needs People is really about that recognition that there is so much richness and so much strength, and, you know, the power of understanding and continual occupation that people have brought to country is an asset for people themselves and Australia, and their work benefits every one of us. Doesn't matter whether you live in, you know, Melbourne, Sydney or the bush, if you want to see a healthy environment, if you want to know that local communities are taking action to create jobs for people, and if you see the incredible value of the cultural understanding over millennia that people are bringing to country management, then I think you can recognise that we need to come up with models that support that, and that's what this does.
And with the Indigenous protected areas, does this latest seven new areas, where does that fit in terms of the ones that have been previously announced, and I guess the hope of this coalition that more might join?
You know, there are, you know, many groups around the country. The Indigenous protected areas have been around for about 20 years now. This is the 21st year of their operation, actually. And there's 75 individual IPAs currently up and running. That covers 67 million hectares of Australia. That's an enormous area of country. And with some that went into planning last year and this year, we're in the process of adding, you know, around about another 30 million hectares through, you know, many IPAs. Now, there's a lot of work to be done on country to develop those plans, to make sure they work. We have to collectively make sure that people are resourced to manage and not just left with a line on a map. And so that's part of the funding package, and that's what, you know, today's announcement will contribute to. So I'd say it's another step, but it's a big step in an evolving story that probably hasn't been recognised enough for the benefit that traditional owners are bringing by offering up their own land in many cases to say, we want to contribute this, to manage it in a careful way, to protect for our own community, the future, to ensure that our culture stays strong, but also that country stays healthy. And I think that every Australian can really take a lot of pride and really give, you know, step back and give some admiration to TOs for how they've stuck to country over many, many years, despite many, many challenges of, you know, native title, land rights and many other things. People have not given up and their connection to country is not broken. And the exciting thing about this is that it puts that in a contemporary context where, you know, we are going to need every hand on deck to be able to look after country into the future. We know we've got a lot of challenges and threats. I would say that IPAs now are really something that is probably the major part of the way we deliver, you know, good, thoughtful conservation management on country in Australia.
Well, thank you so much, Patrick. I've asked all the questions I wanted to ask. Is there anything else that you would like to say?
I'd just like to send a message out to all those traditional owners working on country all around Australia, whether they're, you know, one of our partners or not. We know that the commitment to country is unbroken. We'd send a message of respect, I guess, to all those people who perhaps haven't got the funding or the resourcing yet they need and are facing challenges in their own country, is that I think there's, you know, sometimes, you know, a lot of the news is gloomy. We'd like to think this shows one positive step forward that we can work on together, and wish everyone success, and certainly we'll keep working with those people who are partners of ours to support them in their aspirations for good management of country.
Hear more stories in your language by visiting sbs.com.au.